You're listening to Random Idiocy, candid conversations about geek culture. I'm coming to you on tape delay from the Random Idiocy bunker. I'm holed up here awaiting the Mayan apocalypse with the three gentlemen I'd have on my apocalypse team on any day. I have with me Joel Mulvey. How are you doing, sir? Joe? Am I not hearing anything now?
Me neither.
Okay, so someone can still hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. You. Oh, we lost Mr. Mulvey. The apocalypse has gotten him.
Yeah, the first to go.
It's on the East Coast. Oh, my God.
Dirk, I had no idea Joe was black. That's crazy.
All right, then. Well, we'll try to get...
That's pretty spooky,
calling the apocalypse, and then he disappears. Well, I'll try to get him back in a minute, but while we're still going, we have Mr. Woody Tondorf. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I mean, considering a ghost planet is going to crash into our own, I'm just enjoying the last few moments.
I'm glad you took the time out to join me for the last few moments. I feel kind of special.
Oh, it's okay. In the middle of this, I'm just participating in a giant silent orgy. So if at any point I suddenly, exclaim something, don't be concerned.
Not at all. We'll just say it's Tourette's. And then also we have the master of horror himself, Mr. Dirk Manning. How are you doing, sir?
Good. I'm on my way over to his place.
I know. Apparently we did not get the invite, so.
The safe word is schadenfreude.
Oh. Yeah. So I assume neither of you guys are really worried about the so-called apocalypse happening.
The safe last I earned.
I mean, I've been waiting. Everyone's been checking in Australia and stuff. Australia still seems to be there, so I assume we're all okay.
False alarm. I think we'll make it through.
Hey, bottom line, if the Mayans were that smart, there'd still be Mayans.
There it is.
There we go. I saw that on Facebook. Someone put, the Mayans didn't see the Spaniards coming. So, of the apocalypse,
that's it.
If you guys had to choose an apocalypse to go through, I mean, you don't have a choice. You have to go through one of them. Which one would you get? We got zombie apocalypse. We got the biblical rapture that Dirk's written about. We got the Stand, where there's a plague that takes everybody out, or on that show Revolution, when all the power goes out.
Oof. What about I want to guess robot apocalypse, just for the off chance, because in all reality, you and I and Dirk, we're not going to make it. We all want to believe that in the zombie apocalypse, we'd be the person on top of the car shooting at all the zombies. But really, we would be the third zombie in the row, just being I can get that guy, let me go. But I think in a robot apocalypse, I think that you and I and Dirk would be immediately assimilated and maybe have a good chance of maybe being a Deathlok kind of Terminator monstrosity or something. And that way, I can run super fast and not have to worry about peeing or anything. And that sounds okay, It's just simpler.
There you go.
I don't know what I just came in on, but that was awesome.
We're talking about our... We're just talking about what apocalypse we'd want to live through.
Well, see, the lack of urination and having, is definitely a plus for a robot apocalypse vote. However, then I always flash back to that episode, or the installment of Global Frequency by Warren Ellis with the robot, the bionic man. Mm-hmm. And then I think about RoboCop. I'm like, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm a tumor. I've seen The Matrix. One of them assimilated a pod or something. What if the robot apocalypse actually happened and we are now living in The Matrix and just not aware of the fact that it happened?
I'm okay with it. I'm okay being in The Matrix myself. It seems nice. My life is pretty good. I have no big complaints.
Yeah, as Cypher said, ignorance is bliss.
Exactly.
In the scheme of things, that's right, so... But if it comes down to a Lovecraftian Cthulhu apocalypse, mm-hmm. I just know that being a worshiper of Cthulhu, I'm hoping that gets me enough brownie points that I'm eating first. I want to see the rest, man. Just eat me now. We'll just get out of the way because I don't want to stick around for the craziness that happens.
Oh, see, my plan was for it. The Cthulhu did show up. I was driving to your house. I assumed you'd know what to do.
Jump in his maw. Find his mouth and climb in.
Remember to say thank you as the jaws just come down.
That's it.
Indeed, indeed. Joe, how about you? What apocalypse would you?
Like a kiss.
Do you have an apocalypse preference, Joe?
A preference? I mean, I would like to say I hate all the I want all the useless people. Like, I want there to be a big hole in the ground and just all the dumb people of the earth kind of like somehow be shifted into it. So that way we're only left with the thinkers. But no, I don't think I have any ideal apocalypse outside of maybe there being less traffic on the other end. That'd be kind of nice. You know, I live in New York, so there's not much space. So if all of a sudden, you know, and it sounds horrible, but if we could get rid of like 50% of the people in New York and blame it on some sort of doomsday, you know, blame it on the Mayans. Those fuckers are going far too much for far too long. So if we could get rid of the people that, you know, kind of open it up a little bit more, you know, I'm not going to say it'd be the worst thing ever. But no plans for the aftermath.
Okay. I don't know. I was just thinking while you guys were talking. An alien type of pox would be bad. So I think I can make a good house pet. I'd be okay with that.
I hope you're not terribly attached to your anus being the size it is now.
Well, I mean, yeah, I choose between my anus and being alive. I don't know. I'm just...
Yeah, I mean, it's elastic. Your life is not. You know?
Exactly. Just to put it all in perspective, ooh, you know, in the long run, you'll get used to it eventually. Oh. You get used to anything over time. So,
you know, I think I want to throw my hat back in the ring.
Go ahead, Woody.
Sorry. I think if I could go back to change my answer, I kind of want to go back to zombie apocalypse. And here's the really dark reason why. I want to just survive for long enough so that I can find the people who have turned, who I really just fucking hate, and just eliminate them with no guilt.
There you go.
Now, see, that, I'm the opposite. I would want to go find them just to follow them around in their shambling, worthless life as zombies and laugh at them. I would condemn them to a half-life.
So you do all Michonne style.
Yeah, I would put them out of their misery.
Hey, just cut off their jaws, put them on a chain, and just have them walk you around feeling all superior.
Yeah, no one ever thinks about the fact that Michonne's brothers were probably, when they get beheaded, they're just like, thank fucking Christ. Like,
yeah.
This has been the worst. I've been hungry for, like, months, and you won't help us out at all. Like, this is the worst.
Worst, you know, sister ever.
That
worst
was,
Armageddon ever.
That whole thing, that's my one issue with that TV show with The Walking Dead, is how easy things seem to cut through zombies. It's like, it's perfectly sliced. I mean, maybe her sword is super sharp, but like when they're breaking off axes and like machetes, they like lops through them like a hot knife through butter. I don't know if becoming a zombie turns your bones into like jello, but there'd still be resistance.
No, I think it's more like tissue paper. And I think that's fucking science. You can't go against science. I think.
But it's weird. It's a catch-22
like
of the zombie apocalypse.
It's extreme osteoporosis. I mean, it's not like these zombies are getting calcium or anything. They don't eat the bones. They just eat the flesh.
It's
and yet, like their
like
jaws are still strong enough to break flesh?
Exactly. If they can still bite and rip through my flesh, their bones have to be strong. Because you just can't say their jaws and their teeth are still strong.
Right. You can't have it always.
Yeah. So.
Well, here's the thing.
Well,
I don't
where does all the blood go?
I live in a cemetery.
Say it again, Joe.
Well, you know, it's funny, talking about the science of zombies, the one and only letter I've ever written to a comic book is the one and only letter that ever got published. And it was to The Walking Dead, and I think it was in issue 66, or no, 46 maybe. I don't remember. I have to look. But it was asking Kirkman if the zombies poop or what happens to the food they eat.
Oh.
Right. So
that's yeah.
A little Dirk Manning trivia there for you.
Maybe zombies are like elves in for Tolkien. Their system is so perfect they don't have waste. I'm just crossing genres right with that one. That's what I remember reading about elves, that they don't go to the bathroom, that anything they digest is perfectly processed through their body and they don't waste anything. They're like, you know,
so you're saying that all girls are elves.
Exactly. Well, elves are like the Navajo. They don't waste any of the buffalo.
There was a great Far Side cartoon or comic strip. I'll never forget this. It was it's old Indian guy or Native American with his son, and he's holding up this little squiggly thing, and he goes, "Now pay attention, son. We don't know what this is, but it's the only part of the buffalo we don't use."
Right.
I just always thought that was funny.
Oh, that's good stuff. All right, let's dive into the news we'll be discussing today. We'll start with the fun stuff. We've had two trailers come out that are pretty cool, at least for me, for geek culture. We had The Man of Steel, finally had a full trailer come out. And then we had Star Trek, I think it's called Into the Darkness or The Darkness, something like that. And I thought they both did a pretty good job. What did you guys think of the Man of Steel trailer?
Wow,
I was like, wow, silence.
I thought it was solid, you know. Yet again, we are seeing a lot of origin stuff, it seems like, of Superman, which it's kind of like, we know. He was a farm boy.
Doesn't know over the age of like 9 Superman's origin? I mean, I'm pretty sure everyone knows it by now.
Yeah, and that's I guess my only point of contention, you know. And then it's like we know. I mean, we know Superman's origin. Let's just show me him flying around, doing cool stuff. But I mean, how many Superman movies have had his origin now? How many television shows? We had Smallville. Like, was it 10 seasons? Superman's origin.
Yeah, 10 seasons.
Like
7
that?
Were watchable.
Yeah. So, I mean, it looks cool, and I'm still holding out hope, but let's move on.
I'm cautiously optimistic about it. It just seems like, and I'm not a Superman fan, but I think part of the reason that they always try to go back to the origin story, or part of the reason that they might go back, or they're going to the origin for this movie, is that they want to really push the fact that he's not from here. He wrestles with this problem. He's this godlike being who magically looks exactly like us. Let's not even get into that. but like the thing that I thought was always interesting about the trailer was that they have this whole, the crux of it is that young Clark Kent probably saves a school bus full of kids or fellow classmates. And he asks, or someone asks Pa Kent, Kevin Costner, should he have just let those kids die? Mm-hmm. And he says, maybe, which everyone is up in arms about, and no one forgets or no one remembers that trailers are just cut together to give you the reaction that you want. I guarantee you he doesn't say maybe, but I wish that he had, because it'd just be great to have, of all people, Pa Kent, who is like, he's like Uncle Ben, but like, he's like Uncle Ben and Captain America came together into one like wise white old person. And
exactly.
And he's saying, like, hey, maybe all those kids should have died. And you're like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Jesus, Pa Kent.
But
this
you know
is
what?
Ridiculous.
I liked it. When I heard that, I was like, you know what? If as a father, you're like, okay, if my son goes out and saves these people, the government's going to grab them. Everyone knows. If you ever show superpowers, we all know this. You hide your superpowers. And to me, my flesh and blood is important. And the few kids on that bus, I don't know if I put my son in that kind of situation, especially because he's a kid knowing that maybe he'll grow up to be, you know, not necessarily Superman, but he could do so much better. And those 12 kids who died on that bus will not amount to the greatness my son can do.
And getting whisked away because of that, exactly.
It's messed up to say out loud, but it kind of what it is. But like what he said, you know, you just hear maybe, but you know the rest of the line is like, well, maybe you need to hide your identity. Maybe something, something, something. He's going to continue that line. And there's going to be more to it. It's not going to be, maybe those kids, those bastard kids should have died. I don't think Podcast says that. I expect more.
I think he is just going to say maybe. And I think it humanizes the character and does something that never happened in Spider-Man, which is it makes, in this case, Superman's father, a non-idealized little token character. There is nothing bad about Uncle Ben. He was a total, in Spider-Man's case, he was a total saint. And in this case, it's a very valid, it's a very human response.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should let him die. You know,
that'd be great. I'd be psyched if that would be the case. I just don't know if they have like, I don't know. Do they have the gumption to go there? You know,
I don't know. It's
Christopher Nolan and Scott or Zack Snyder, right?
Scott Snyder's the guy who's writing Batman.
Scott Snyder's writing it. It's
what's his name? He did the Watchmen movie.
Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder. There we go.
Zack Snyder. Why would I doubt myself? No, but you know, I mean, they put out some kind of darker movies and everything else. And like I said, we'll see. But the less origin, the better. I mean, if that's the only thing we see with his origin, I'll be really, really happy. But sadly, I think we're going to see more and enough. You know, imagine if every James Bond movie was his origin.
Exactly. James Bond gets away without doing it, and they change freaking actors every few years, and they don't have to retell the origin. You just know James Bond, super spy, bangs hot chicks, drives a cool car. Everybody knows it. We don't have to be told it every time.
What you mean to say is that a new agent steps into the Bond identity each new time.
See, that if they actually establish that, I'd be 100% behind that. I don't think...
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Because I know, I think they're trying to keep all the content, like all the stuff happened to one spy, but good Lord, if he actually lived through all that, he'd be a... he would have snapped from like PTSD by now.
In my world, that's what it is. It's that James Bond is an identity.
Exactly. Yeah, it makes the most sense.
Right. And that, you know, these different things happen as you go, and, you know, but... regardless, but Superman, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I guess I said, I just hope for a good movie, and obviously they're looking to launch a franchise. You know, DC's got a lot of ground to make up in regards to what Marvel's been doing in the movies,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully this will be a first step. I mean, you know.
Well, I mean,
Chelsea?
To me, I'm pumped because we actually, in the trailer, for a second, we see Superman punch something, and I haven't seen that in a long time. Superman's big on lifting and throwing things. But to actually see him throw down, I mean, at first I was upset about Zod and I guess it's Ursa being like basically like Superman 2 again. But at least we get to see him throw down. I mean, other than Superman 2, I mean, Superman fought the Nuclear Man, which was what, Superman 5? Other than that, he's mostly lifting and throwing heavy objects, which is,
I never
you know,
really thought about that. Huh.
Yeah, I mean, Superman 1, it was Lex Luthor and the real estate thing. Superman 2 is when he fought the Kryptonians. 3 was... I know in my head, 3 in my head was when he fought Clubber Lang, but that's Rocky. Well, that's the wrong movie. So, but yeah, he doesn't really.
3 a Brainiac?
No, 3 was that Richard Pryor being like the almost like the Toy Man type deal?
I thought Brainiac was involved in one of them somehow. I don't remember though. You know.
And then yeah,
I remember 3.
Yeah, and then there was then Superman Returns. He just lifted up the big Kryptonite island and threw it into the sun and fell back like Jesus to Earth. And then so there's, at least he's actually fighting. And then, you know, here's something. What do you guys think of the missing red trunks? Is that important to you?
I'm all about it.
Yeah, I don't mind it. Dirk, do you care about the red trunks?
You know, it breaks up the color a little bit, but I wear all black, so who am I to say?
Mm. Well, that's well, I noticed they kind of patterned it after the new 52 costume, but they left out the red belt, which I'm like, that's a little splash of color you need to break up the blue, because it looks just like a weird blue jumpsuit he's wearing now with the red booties. And then maybe I always thought his gauntlet should have been red instead of that weird off blue color they happen to be. But, you know, I'm not a costume designer. What do I know?
No, but that would have been cool. I wonder if you had done that, if it was maybe starting to lean a little too close to the color scheme of Captain America's Avenger costume, which can we all agree that the Captain America costume in the Avengers is inferior to the Captain America World War II costume?
Oh, of course, yeah. Where's his pirate boots? That's all I want to know. Pirate boots and chainmail are a fashion sense that's coming back. It's coming back around.
Well, the Avengers version, it just looked so plastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just going off on the comics, have you guys read the whole, how they just did the Marvel Now thing? I know how out into the comics you guys are, out into the new stuff. Have you seen that, the Marvel Now Avengers?
Yeah, I read issue 1 last week. It's weird. I don't know what they're trying to. Can someone explain to me what they're trying to accomplish? Like, is it just kind of like, hey, like we're pivoting a little bit, or this is a new take, or what is this?
Yeah, what Marvel Now is, because basically, DC did the whole grab the etch sketch and start all over. Yeah, they started all over. Where Marvel's like saying, we're just making not a sharp left, we're doing like a slight left. We're gonna put they're shuffled all the creative teams around. And put, you know, the guy who was writing Fantastic Four is now writing this, and they just moved everybody around. And it's like new directions, but nothing is being reset. So you still have everything that happened in the last 40 years, 50 years of Marvel, however long they've been around, still happened. We're just going in a new direction now, which is kind of like a cheap cop-out to me, because if you shuffled and put your best artists on your best projects, what were you doing the last 10 years anyway?
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh no, but it's like when McDonald's says like, oh, our chicken McNuggets are now like 100% white meat. You're like, what the fuck were they before?
Exactly. Exactly. So, but
they're just trying to get away from the heavy continuity and make these easily accessible books.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's,
so we'll see. Yeah.
It's all about the new number ones. I mean, look what they're doing with Amazing Spider-Man. They canceled it. After number 700, just so they can have a superior Spider-Man being number one in a couple weeks.
And I have somehow avoided these spoilers, so
yeah, me too,
man. I'm curious to see what's going on, so don't ruin it.
Oh, you know, okay, I was about to go into a whole rant right now, but if you haven't read it,
No, don't do that. I haven't read it because it's not out yet.
So.
Oh, wait, do you know the twist in 698?
Yeah, I do know that.
Okay.
Well, no, 700 came out. Didn't 700 already come out?
No,
700's on the
26th. People have been spoiling it online, but it comes out the day after Christmas.
Oh, see, I went on to Reddit, and I saw the guy who posted it page by page what was on there. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I didn't read it.
But, okay, so you read 698, though, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So you know the whole switcheroo thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What's your – do you think – I mean, is that a cop-out? Is that something you're okay with, the whole mind switch thing? Is that like a cliche, or is that something you're all right with?
It's, you know, it's whatever. It's fine. If anyone – again, without – I don't want any spoilers of what's coming up, but – long term, if anybody really thinks that they're gonna destroy the idea of Peter Parker being Spider-Man, it's like, get a clue. That's my take on it right now. Really, that's not gonna happen.
Okay.
It's not gonna happen long term. That's my opinion.
Well, how long do you think it's gonna be? How long do you think the switch is gonna last?
As long as it makes money.
How long has Miles Morales been Spider-Man and Ultimate Spider-Man?
I think issue 18 or 19 came out this week.
So we've been
a year and a half.
Yeah. I bet you, I mean, look, character death or any kind of character switching or whatnot, or anyone who goes away from a book who's especially, you know, instrumental in the world, like Peter Parker, he's not going to, especially if it's in the actual 616, like they're not going to have Peter Parker go away for more than, you know, a year, even if they did that. I mean, I can only assume that that might be the direction that they would want to go in. But again, like as comic book readers, like you can't, it's soap opera. Like you just wait for, you know, Captain America to get resurrected or Hawkeye to be brought back into reality for like the bajillionth time.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it doesn't make any less.
Remember when the Human Torch died a couple of months ago?
Oh, that was, well, that was terrible. He died in like, what was it, like 688 or whatever, and I was like, oh, he's coming back for 700, and like clockwork, he was back for 700. Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
So, well, my thing is, it's so like it's depressing to me. Like you can see how much they try to get the movies and comics to line up. That Amazing Spider-Man is going to come out in another year or so, and you know when Amazing Spider-Man 2 comes out, Peter's going to have to be the one in the comic book. So whatever change, whatever drastic thing they're doing now, already has an expiration date on it. There's no way that movie's going to come out. And spoilers for people who haven't read 698, I'll put it in the show notes. There's no way Octavius is going to be Spider-Man when the movie's out, unless that's part of the movie. So, which I don't see that happening.
Well, I mean, right. And of course, the other side of the pancake would be, well, look, there's 5,000 Spider-Man comics out there you can read about Peter Parker. Hey, here's, see what we're doing now. But that being said, I agree with you. I mean, and keep, you know, and in my case, I'm sure a lot of people, I lived through the proposed Azrael as Batman.
Oh, and that's awesome.
You know, and awesome or not, we all know it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, they're not going to replace Bruce Wayne as Batman long term.
Well,
I mean, he's an iconic character.
Interesting, though.
Peter Parker's an iconic character. I mean, but just tell good stories, and so be it.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to
do? With the exception of... and I'm talking about the 616 Spider-Man, like with the exception of Morlun when he was dead for maybe like two issues, has Peter Parker ever been killed? I just feel like that hasn't really happened to him yet.
No.
I mean, what happened with the whole clone thing? What was that? I mean,
He wasn't, they thought he was dead, but the clone had taken his place and then the clone died and they thought it was him. So Peter Parker technically was never dead. And then when Straczynski was doing that other storyline, they thought he died, but he ended up going into a cocoon and came out as a with different spider powers, which I thought was which I thought was cool, and I can't believe they just kind of ignored it. Even though they gave those powers to Kane over to Scarlet Spider.
Yeah, for the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I don't think he's ever died, like been dead out of costume. There've been other people who've been Spider-Man, but I don't think he's ever been dead at the time.
Which I guess is part of the reason that I did like what they did with Ultimate Spider-Man, when they actually said, like, look, he's dead. He is gone. We've got this other guy. They made it up to you, like, a little bit with Spider-Man, which, by the way, I really enjoyed.
Oh, it was really good, yeah. It was better than I thought it would be.
Yes, exactly. But it seems like, I mean, look, I would be overjoyed if they actually decided to stick with having Miles Morales be Spider-Man, because I'm enjoying the storyline. I think it's great to have an even younger Spider-Man and see how they want to, you know, push it. I think his relationship with Genki is great. I don't know. I'm also a Brian Bendis apologist, so take that as you will.
I am Bendis is hit or miss with me sometimes. Sometimes when it's not, I don't like Bendis necessarily on team books. When he's doing like solo characters, he's good. But when he does a team book, it seems to be like the characters all have the same voice, and that irks me.
That's totally right. Yeah.
Yes.
That's
Thor and Wolverine shouldn't be cracking jokes like they're Spider-Man. That should be what's happening.
So, right.
But I actually, with Miles Morales, the Ultimate Universe so far has been pretty consistent with the dead is dead thing. Because Cyclops, Wolverine, all these beasts, all these guys have been dead, and there's been no coming back. I mean, Wolverine's son's there, and he's the new Wolverine or whatever. But everyone who's died has pretty much stayed dead. So to me, that's what I like most about the Ultimate Universe. It actually has.
Didn't Thor come back? Or Thor, Captain America, who died in Ultimatum? I can't believe I actually said it out loud.
I think Thor did, but I forgot how they wrote it off about how he lost his godhood or something. Like his god self died, and now he's just a mortal man with godlike powers or something like that. But
okay.
So he just killed his son not too long ago in one of the issues. So it's pretty crazy. But so we're now bouncing all over the place. Since we're on Spider-Man, we can just jump to, have you guys heard about Jamie Foxx's role in the next Spider-Man movie?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so how are you feeling with him being Electro?
He's a good actor. I'm sure if the script is decent, he'll do just fine. You know, I have no problem with it one way or another.
I think it'll definitely be interesting. I wonder how much of it is the fact that Jamie Foxx now has like momentum with Django Unchained and whatnot. They're like, oh, he's doing well. Has anyone thought about Jamie Foxx for Electro? It'll be interesting to see what direction they want to take him in. But I mean, he's like Dirk said, he's a fine actor. I think he can do a great job. He can obviously handle good material. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I have no reason to freak out about this.
So are we prepared for the unavoidable backlash of why are they making a white character black thing again? Because we had that with when they changed the Kingpin to Michael Clark Duncan. And I mean, not like Electro is this huge character or Kingpin was a big character, but there's going to be people complaining. I mean, remember the crap they got when Miles Morales was Spider-Man? There's going to be idiot people online. It's just, I'm not saying they shouldn't do it. I think the best actor should play the role. And from what I've been reading, they've been talking, the direction that looked like they're going is the Ultimate Universe Electro, where that guy's basically living energy. So I don't know how much it's actually going to look like Jamie Foxx, or not Jamie Foxx so much in a, you know, one of those gray green screen suits or whatever. So who knows how it's going to look.
Jamie Foxx is in that movie to be Jamie Foxx. If he turns into pure electricity, which he inevitably will for the big showdown at the very end of the movie, he may look a little different. But until then, you're going to see a black Electro. I mean, just point blank. That's the way I see it.
Which is fine. It's interesting. I mean, because there are just so many, the vast majority of superheroes and supervillains are, the vast majority of them are white. And, it's interesting to watch people get upset about the fact that, like, that you would have someone who is traditionally played by a white character or whatever be portrayed by a black actor. And it's kind of like, well, first of all, why do you care? And second, who would you want for Dylan?
Yeah. And the thing is that the people complaining, how many of them are going to know that Max Dillon is his real name?
Right.
You know, they're going to know it's Electro. Do you really know his name? I mean, come on.
Right.
I don't
learned that tonight.
Say what now?
I just learned that tonight that was his real name.
But, I don't know. I don't think there is. Is there a character that you can't change the ethnicity for? I mean, I remember reading about how Will Smith was offered the Superman role when I think Mick G was going to be the director, and he turned it down because he knew the world would basically explode with a black Superman. I don't know. Would it be? I mean, would the world? I mean, what's the big deal if Superman is played by a black guy? Would it matter?
I think it would just. I think it would break people's tiny little minds. You know, that's interesting. That's Will Smith has turned down two different opportunities to be Superman. He turned down from McGee, and he also turned down being Neo in The Matrix.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Huh. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's just a matter of you know, I'd like to think that people are becoming more or more and more colorblind every day and every year. And I mean, you know, if it's good, it's good. You know, I mean, to me, that's all it boils down to. But, you know, I just, you know, I mean, I write a comic with a black lead character in Tales of Mystery. And it's just funny to me that because it's a black and white grayscale comic, I inevitably always have people say, oh, his name's Mystery. But more people like, oh, he's black. Like, yeah, he's been black the whole series. And like, I never noticed. Like, good. You know, but people like, why would you even have to comment on the fact that he's black? You know, right. Alan Moore made a pretty interesting comment a little while back about how when he did Tom Strong, and Tom Strong and his wife, it was one of the very few, if not one of the first, interracial couples in comics.
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot about that. Yeah, and they had a daughter too.
And it just shows what a white boys club, you know, comics really is in a lot of ways like that. Mm. You know, and sadly, if you have black characters, for example, a lot of times, you know, that it's very, I would argue, very marginalized or very stereotyped.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I'm working on a project with called Midnight Tiger. The main character is a teenage African-American boy, and people just assume that without seeing me that I'm black because I'm writing a black character.
Right.
I mean, my name is Dwayne. It's kind of typically an African-American name anyway to begin with, because you think, like, you know, Dwayne Wade, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, those guys, you know, African-American guys. So they just assume that I am this way, and then when they see pictures of me or when I show up at cons and stuff, they're like, oh, like, they're like, what? I'm like, I'm sorry, like, I'm not allowed to write it?
You're the weirdest looking black person I've ever seen.
I got that Michael Jackson disease. That's why I'm all white. That's what happened. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm writing him as, like I tell him, I just write him as a teenager. I mean, I work in high schools every day, and I hear teenagers talk. So I just use their language, and I don't really – I try not to see him as that way. Like, I don't want to consciously, oh, how would a black kid react to this? To me, it sounds kind of racist. So.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, I don't know. Could it be in black? What would the backlash be to a black Batman or a black Superman movie or something like that? Whatever. You know, if you don't like it, don't watch it.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, you vote with your wallet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. We don't, and this goes even to some of the other, you know, news going on with, like, the Gail Simone thing and stuff like that, for example. It's like, you know, with your dollars, but make no mistake, no matter how much you love these characters, you don't own them. DC owns them. Marvel owns them. Mm-hmm. It's their characters. They can do what they want. They can hire who they want to hire to work on. They can fire who they want to fire. So.
Exactly. And just to jump on that topic, Gail Simone, longtime writer of Batgirl, I mean, I don't know anyone who speaks bad of her, really, her writing, or her, especially her on Batgirl. And just recently, she found out she's no longer writing Batgirl through an email from her new editor. To me, I've never had the pleasure of firing somebody, but I would assume you'd either, bare minimum, if you're on different coasts, because, you know, we live in a global world, you'd at least call them and talk to them about it, and not just, you know, send them an email or send them a Twitter or a direct message through Twitter or something. I mean, it seems so impersonal. I mean, what are they thinking? She's one of the few female writers that's well-respected, well-known, like, everyone's okay with her, writing one of their one of their top female characters next to Wonder Woman. I would say that Batgirl, I don't know the numbers, got to be selling close to Wonder Woman numbers. And they're taking her off. It does, to me, it makes no sense. I can't imagine the thought process behind it, other than it's a new editor who wants to create his team. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, there was. I think what came out is there was definitely some sort of personality conflict or something. And whether it came, and if that's the case, whether it became before the email firing or after. I mean, I think everyone can agree it was kind of a very callous and impersonal move to make. But again, I'm going to date myself. Did we learn nothing from Mark Waid and Ringo getting fired off of Fantastic Four back in the day?
Yeah.
We don't own the character. It doesn't matter how much we like the creators. It doesn't matter how much we like the characters. It doesn't matter how much we like the combination. We don't own them, you know?
Yep.
And Gail is a phenomenal person. I mean, she came up through the ranks doing the old column, you know, You'll Be Sorry, over Comic Resources.
Mm-hmm.
She's just a fantastic human being. I guess word is now that she's going to be having another book at DC instead. There's obviously some sort of hubbub. But
it's supposed to be earth-shattering or something.
Really?
Well, yeah. Bleeding Cool says it'll break the internet, but, you know, the they've ever done hyperbole.
Bleeding Cool says every news story they do is going to break the internet.
Exactly.
So.
But, you know, I mean, I think that's a crappy way to dismiss someone off of a book, but it just shows, you know, where that editor's head was and where the priorities were. Hopefully the editor was scolded and, you know, don't do that. And it sounds like hopefully if Gail's getting a new book, hopefully some other people in DC realize it was pretty crappy and are taking care of her. But that being said, she's an employee.
Yeah, true,
yeah,
true.
And Dirk's totally right. And I think if, like I play devil's advocate, we don't know. All we know is the happenstance of how it ended. We don't know if maybe Gail and her editor had sat down, you know, 24 times face to face trying to figure out, okay, you know, perhaps Gail got too married to the book or whatnot, or, you know, for all we know, there was a big personality conflict and they had this out, you know, over however many face to face talks. And then she's waiting. And I can't tell you how many times I've been waiting to hear a response from someone after I've had meetings or whatnot. And then it just comes down to one email saying, okay, we talked about it. It's a no, or, you know, or whatnot. But you can absolutely say that, you know, for something as big as that saying you're off this book, even if it was dotting the I, you would like to do the human contact thing and actually give a phone call, or God forbid, in person or FaceTime or Skype even.
Exactly.
But there was an interesting point, and please bear in mind that I do not know Gail Simone at all, and I think that she's absolutely fantastic. And to your point about Wonder Woman, I think of all the creators in the New 52, the fact that Gail was going to take Barbara out of the chair had every single person going, what the hell is wrong with you? You are the worst person. I can't believe you did this. You better have a good reason. And by about the fourth issue, people said, oh yeah, she's doing a pretty good job. Yeah, that's good. She's doing a great job with that Barbara Gordon character. And she made everyone be okay with it.
Yeah, you're trying to have people on the internet rage against things that they don't know about yet?
Call the cops!
See, I'm reading right here online that the rumors, I guess, before the Bleeding Cool article is that she's going to be writing a Stephanie Brown book.
Holy shit!
That's what it seems.
I would lose it. I would absolutely lose it.
That would be, I mean, if she's got to move, but I mean, she couldn't do both? I mean, good goodness. I mean, Brian Bendis writes like 4 books. I mean,
it sounds like there was some sort of conflict, you know, with something or whatever, but
it would certainly explain why DC has been militant about erasing Stephanie Brown from every single thing she could possibly ever be in.
True, true. I mean, Wally West, Donna Troy, they all just seem to, like, they never existed. And Wally West was fairly popular.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, if it's Stephanie Brown, that would be great. I mean, that'd be, I guess, the only way they could save face at this point is to do that.
Well, I keep waiting for something to really, and I know that we're not there yet, but I keep waiting for, like, what's the real exclamation point in Death of the Family that's going to be at the end, or, you know, midway through it. I just finished reading Nightwing and Red Hood and the Outlaws, and I'm kind of going, like, this is great. I like the direction that they're going in. I think the wrinkle they're putting on the Joker being this, I don't know, borderline supernatural entities who somehow knows absolutely everything about all of these characters. I have a little bit of the problem with them creating Jason Todd, but
that to me is like, really? He just created him so he could kill him? I mean, that's an interesting hobby.
someone called some interesting paradox bordering on a joke.
Don't worry, they'll punch reality again, and everything will it'll be fine. When you have the punch reality card in your deck, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
When you have something that you literally call the miracle machine, it's kind of like, yeah, and everything's on the table here.
Exactly, it's called the Deus Ex Machina machine. So, with Gail leaving her book, another prominent female in the comic industry left. Karen Berger left Vertigo, and she basically was Vertigo. She's been there, I think, for over 20 years. And Vertigo, you had Sandman, you had The Losers, and all these other great books that have come out, and she's no longer there behind the wheel. I mean, Vertigo's been kind of pared down over the last few years, and with Swamp Thing and Animal Man's books that would generally be under that label are now part of the whole Dark or Edge label that DC does. And what was the name of the book the John Constantine book? Hellblazer?
Hellblazer.
Yeah, that one just got canceled. That was one of their longest running books. And that one got canceled for a John Constantine book in the New 52, in the regular universe. So, I mean, I don't know where she's going to go. I mean, wherever she goes, she's going to be a boon to them. I mean, it's just crazy to me that another she was the most probably to me the most prominent woman in comics that I knew of, and now she's just right now off the board. I don't know what's going on there. I mean, do you think she left because of the lack of books? Seems like they're going to fold Vertigo. Or, I mean, where do you think she could end up? I mean, what are you guys' opinions overall on this whole Karen Berger nonsense?
I think it's a real bummer that she's gone, but, I mean, to play the devil's advocate, as you mentioned, she's been there over 2 decades. You know, what does anybody expect? You know, that's not to say that she couldn't be there forever. And I think it would have been fine if she was. She is an institution. She's probably one of the most influential people in the modern age of comics, period. End of discussion. That, you know, now, that being said, I mean, where is she going to go? What's she going to do? I don't know. I mean, you know, basically everyone that was at Vertigo now is just moving up a spot, it seems like. You know, you got Shelley Bond there still and things like that. But, you know, I would like to think at this point Karen can write her own ticket. You know, I mean, she could go anywhere she wants and probably serve as an editor anywhere that, you know, would want her, be it Boom or IDW or Dark Horse or Marvel or whatever. If they wanted to form another kind of imprint and utilize her connections the same way that Marvel did when they scooped up Axel Alonso, it could be done. I mean, there's no question that the world is her oyster in that regard, I'm sure, just based on the relationship she's been able to forge, and her record speaks for itself.
I think Dirk nailed it, and I think he's got every point.
I didn't mean to kill that conversation, sorry.
Master Qui-Gon, more to say, have you?
Where'd everybody go?
Is this just some kind of conversation face-off between you and me, Dirk?
I think so.
I'm sorry. I was just talking for like 30 seconds, realizing I had to push the mute button on my microphone.
I shut it down. I didn't mean to.
Exactly done.
Shut down the podcast. Dirk's got it. It's
drop the mic.
Like Will Ferrell in Old School coming out of the blackout. I'm just James Carville going like, that's it. We're done here.
I'm dropping the mic like Bane.
Exactly. And you're walking away. Exactly. I was
drop,
like,
the drop the mic.
Oh my goodness. I was like, talking like, why? Like they're not hearing me. Oh, I hit mute. That's right. No, the brilliant point you guys didn't hear was I was thinking that for her, I would love to see her go to a smaller imprint like an Archaea or something that does those weird offshoot books that doesn't necessarily do Cape and Cowl. I mean, the books, that seems to be like her playground where she does the stuff that is off the mainstream. And like Dirk was saying, when she left, just the outpouring of love for her from every creator, she would almost have her pick of people who'd want to work with her over wherever she goes. So whoever grabs her is going to be rocking great books within the next year or so. No. I mean,
and she knows that.
Oh yeah, I mean, she's going to land on her feet, and it's going to be great things. It's just a sad state of affairs for Vertigo, which was such a long-standing great imprint, is basically kind of almost like, to me now, it's like a shell of what it used to be. It's not the Vertigo that I remember growing up with. But
well, you got to look where those creators are and what are they doing. Neil Gaiman's doing mainly novels.
Yeah.
Ennis is just kind of spread out doing miscellaneous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Morrison, you know, is doing what he's doing, not very much. Well, he's done a couple little small books over there, but nothing major. You know, just a lot of those creators are just doing other things now. And where's, you know, I mean, you got Azzarello doing, you know, he just did Spaceman through them, and now he's doing Wonder Woman. But I mean, aside from Fables, all the old 1980s, 90s wave of Vertigo books, and largely creators are not doing those books anymore. There was Lightning in a Bottle that was striking for 10 years, but when you have no 100 Bullets, no Preacher,
mm-hmm.
no Sandman, well, you know, you got the one more Sandman thing coming out, you know, which was,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, it's just, if they're going to do, and that was such a creator-friendly imprint, it was creator-friendly almost to the detriment of DC proper. And when Warner Brothers started getting more involved and saying, you know, why do we have these creator-owned books coming out that we're not making any money off of and we're having a hard time turning into movies, losers, yeah, not so much. And it's just, you know, why do Vertigo now when you could go to Image or even Dark Horse or something like that? Why have a Vertigo book now? You don't get the, I don't believe you get the same creator-owned deal, for example. The name itself is weakened because you're not in the company of a lot of these other great books anymore. You can't say I'm putting out books next to Sandman and 100 Bullets and things like that and Preacher. So, you know, I mean, I think if we're going to see more Vertigo, it's just going to be, it's going to be a different Vertigo. And I'll be honest, it may be, and there may be some rebuilding and it may become, you know, the phoenix from the ashes of itself, or it'll just be this little one-off thing and wither up and die. Who knows? But, again, time will tell.
True. Very true. I mean, the way things are going now, you look at things like Chris Roberson over at Monkey Brain. He just got kind of fed up with the game with the big two and is like, I'm going to go play in my own sandbox now, and everything's going good for him. And like you said, creator-owned seems to be the way to go. More and more people are focusing on their own books, printing things off. I mean, with the how we're going into this digital age, people are able to set up their own digital storefronts. You don't need to be part of Marvel or DC to be known or shown anymore. Once you create your own fan base, I mean, some of these guys, it almost seems like the game now is you go get on, do your own little indie book, you get on to DC or Marvel, you get pseudo popular there, and then you go back and create your own, and hopefully you bring 3/4 of your fans with you, and you just run that way from now on.
Well, that's exactly it. I even talked about that in the Right or Wrong book that came out this year. You know, it's like, that's the game now. You do create your own work to get picked up by Marvel or DC, to broaden your horizon, you know, to broaden your appeal to mainstream comic readers, or, you know, the committed comic readers, and get a check for a while. And then people start phasing out to doing their own creator-owned stuff again. And hopefully, if you bring half of the readers with you, you're in remarkable shape. You know,
and that's,
when the money is going straight to you.
And that's Right or Wrong, available on Amazon.com.
Right or Wrong, The Writer's Guide to Creating Comics by Derek Manning.
Exactly.
This holiday season.
Hey, it's right there. I was actually at the comic book shop yesterday. I was picking up some stuff for presents, and I actually saw it on the shelf. They had like 3 or 4 of them sitting there. I'm like, look at that. Dirk all on the shelf.
Nice.
Like a grown-up and stuff now.
What comic shop was this?
This was Amazing Comics in Long Beach.
Oh, thank you, Amazing Comics in Long Beach. Much love.
All right, guys.
Duck lips and a tea sign. It was under a scarf, so you can see.
Oh, we missed it. Sorry. All right, since this is December, this is going to be my last recording of the year. I'd want to, if you guys don't mind with me.
Possibly existence.
Exactly. I mean, in about, at least my time, in 3 hours and 48 minutes, the world's supposed to end. So we
Oh, man. Sorry. This orgy just got into another level. Hang on. No, stay. Who invited her? No. She can't come. Well, I mean, she's coming now, clearly.
Hey.
Look at her face. Sorry. Keep going.
All I want to, just, Woody, treat the farm animals with respect. They're people, too.
No, but they signed the waiver. They knew the risk going in, okay?
Nothing beats those crazy Tondorf end-of-the-world parties.
Oh, did you read my blog?
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. I subscribe to it. Highlight of my day.
Just remember to buy those big boots that have the big holes in the side so you can stick the lamb's back legs through the hole in the boot. It'll make it hard for them to run away.
See? A man with experience right there. I'm just throwing
Dirk, you are my Dr. Phil. That's amazing. You just changed my world a little bit.
The next orgy, if we have one, will be totally better than this one.
This orgy sucks now.
In comparison.
Oh, don't give me that look, Paul. Don't. Stop. Don't look at me. No, seriously, don't look at me. It's weird. You're making my boner. Stop.
No eye contact. That's the rule. No eye contact. It's not gay if there's
no
eye contact.
God, I'm going to have to turn the lights on in here, and no one's going to like that. Yeah, you heard me, Shelly.
All right, looking back at 2012, it was a pretty great year. I mean, a lot of interesting things were going on for geek, especially for geek culture. I mean, I got a little list. We can run down some of the stuff I have. If you guys have anything you'd want to talk about, just go ahead. Feel free to shout out. To me, one of the things that I thought was one of the coolest things that I saw this year was the gentleman who skydived from space. To me, I was like, that was just cool. I mean, I know technically he was only the lower atmosphere. You want to be a buzzkill. Oh, it was only this high in scale and whatever. The guy jumped from space and fell for like 45 minutes. That's like that's like an hour long TV show without the commercials. You know, you watch an entire show, you watch an episode of House on the way down. And then pull a parachute. You know?
He lands, they take the helmet off him, he's just really sad. It's like, it wasn't lupus. Oh, oh
man, it's never lupus.
It's never lupus.
That's just crazy. I mean, it was sponsored by Red Bull, which is cool. Red Bull can get people into space. That's, I mean, right on. You don't see that from, like, Mountain Dew. So,
nope.
That's on their, the ball's in their court now. So, do you guys have anything that stuck out this year as something you want to share and remember with the fans? Anybody?
Well, I guess there's two. I got two, but you can go ahead. Go first. Go first.
No, you go, please.
I was being built up. Well, two things. One, we mentioned a moment ago, but I'll put it out there again. Many, many, about 6 years after I started the column online, 2012 saw the Right or Wrong book come out, which I was really excited about. So not just a cheap plug, but a heartfelt moment as well. The fact that the Right or Wrong book came out in 2012 just makes me really happy. But equally remarkable was the fact that in 2012, for the first time, and I couldn't begin to tell you how many years, I actually read and bought Batman. I started buying the Return of the Death of the Family, the Joker story arc, after hearing that Scott Snyder and Capullo were just doing so much good stuff with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really buy any Marvel or DC books monthly. Mm-hmm. But I will say that Scott Snyder's Batman stuff, I can't believe I'm saying this, believe the hype.
Wow.
What a fantastic book. I mean, just absolutely the probably one of the crown jewels of, I wouldn't even say superhero comics, but one of the crown jewels of comicdom right now.
Yeah.
What those two are doing with that series. When the New 52 was announced over at the Right or Wrong column, I was very enthusiastic about it. And I even said, even though I don't read, you know, DC superhero books, this could be the best thing that ever happened to DC. And I've heard good things about Animal Man, and I've heard good things about Swamp Thing and things like that. And maybe there's other stuff I should explore more, and will maybe at some point. But I will say that Batman is the definitive example of what the New 52 should be across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I heard Wonder Woman, I really need to check out Wonder Woman too, because I like Azzarello a lot.
Yeah.
But as far as a mainstream, well-known comic book character, and a fresh relaunch, you can just get into, pick up, and read, and have it be breathtaking. And I'll tell you what, that issue 13, the first Death of the Family issue with the Joker, is one of probably the most frightening comics I've ever read.
Yeah,
you're absolutely
just,
right.
Just fantastic. So that's been, to me, 2012 would be the year that, like, oh my God, I actually bought and read a Batman comic and just was completely blown away. I don't read the spinoffs, I don't know about those, but Batman Proper by Snyder and Capullo, wow. And I went back and read the Court of Owls stuff.
I was going to ask you that, That was
just fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely the Batman, that was has to be the best thing coming out from DC right now. It's just unbelievably captivating and strong. It's like on a completely another level from the books they're putting out right now. I know, Dirk, I talked to you like over Facebook, so I know you're digging it. What do you think of the new Batman book?
I mean, I think Dirk put it really well. The only thing I guess you could describe me as kind of like a pop comic book fan. Like I'm the kind of person who, I guess if you were to take my taste in comic books and then translate it to music, you would go, why does he listen to so much Katy Perry and or whatever, you know, pop punk band is now popular at this moment. But I have always loved Batman, and I think just the combination of the stories that Snyder is telling and Capullo's art. I saw some of his early Batman commissions before he was actually drawing the book, and it was just off the fucking chain. It was immediate desktop background material.
Oh yeah.
I think the only thing that I take away from this that makes me upset is that the people who are the fans of the Chris Nolan movies will start reading Batman right now and go, oh, this is amazing. This is the same stuff that, like, they're so fucking spoiled. They don't understand just, like, the travesties that came before and the fact that this has to be earned. But I think, to go back to Dirk's point, I read Batman number 13 on an iPad doing the guided view. And for those who haven't read it, spoiler alert, as the Joker is going through Gotham PD and just snapping necks left and right, it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
I have never read or seen a comic that has really just encapsulated the fear and terror of being trapped in the dark while this thing is happening. I was riveted through every single panel. It was magnificent. And there have been some pretty good comics this year. I think of after Batman, I really enjoyed Saga by Brian K. Vaughan. It was something that I hadn't read.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't read something like that in a really long time. I really just liked the different aspects and the imagination of it. And I think it's always a little bit self-indulgent when writers are going through something and they decide to make their comic about it, though you write what you know. But like, I think Straczynski did One More Day while he was getting divorced. And it really just became like this, you know, cry for help across a book. But the fact that Brian K. Vaughan had a kid and made it this and turned that experience of having an infant and all those things of parenthood that I cannot relate to because I can hardly take care of myself. But the fact that he was able to tell that story in that kind of imaginative way, it was just, I was blown away by it. I thought it was really great.
Definitely. I mean, this was a great year for comics. I mean, just mainstream. I mean, like Extreme X-Men. I don't know if you guys even looked at that book. I love it. It's just so off the wall. It's like X-Men meets that TV show Sliders. It's just crazy stuff. Greg Pak's writing it. It's just, I can't recommend it enough. It's like, the two books for me this year are Batman and Extreme X-Men. It sounds so crazy because Extreme X-Men sounds like such a 90s title, which
right.
I think it's where the title first came from. But it's just it's like the opposite of Batman, where Batman's so dark and serious. Extreme X-Men is just batshit crazy. Like this last issue that came out this week, they went to a world that was kind of like My Little Pony, but they were unicorns. But the unicorns, but they ended up becoming devils and demons, and the unicorns changed to these other things. I'm like, they went to a My Little Pony universe. I mean, it's just crazy. But I mean, you gotta look at you got like Dirk said, Swamp Thing, Animal Man. Those are if you would have told me 2 years ago I'd be dying to read Swamp Thing and Animal Man, I would have slapped you in the face because there's no way those books are so not me. But I've been reading them, and I'm hooked. And just those two specifically, because how they work so well together. It's like you have to read them both because they're the same story from different sides. It's just crazy stuff. And what I've also seen this year for comics, it's just this whole renaissance of creator-owned comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like Image, and then like I mentioned earlier, Monkey Brain, and all these other things, people doing these digital imprints on their own. Mark Waid has Thrillbent. All these things are just completely, 5 years ago, couldn't even fathom. There's still mm-hmm. so many different ways to enjoy comic books that there's like almost no excuse not to. It's like, oh yeah, the books cost $4. It's expensive. Thrillbent is only like a dollar or so. Monkey Brain books are either 99 cents or $1.99. There's no excuse not to get into it. There's so many different flavors out there. You cannot help but enjoy comics right now.
Yeah, that's totally true. And correct me if I'm wrong. I'm probably going to show my complete inexperience with good comics, but did DMZ end this year or last year?
I think it was early this year. I'm pretty sure it was early.
Okay.
If it was end of last year, but I'm pretty sure it's early this year. Yeah, that was another great run. Yeah, another great indie book that had a great run.
And I loved the way they ended it. It was completely uncompromising. No one got away clean. It was the way that comic books don't, or mainstream comic books don't have the balls to go in that direction and really just mm-hmm. make, you know, the ending be as sad as fuck kind of thing.
Yeah, not every book needs to have the quote-unquote happy ending. Real
yeah.
life, bad things happen, and not everybody wins. And that's what's great about the creator-owned and the indie books, is that you don't have to wrap it up because someone might want to use that character in a movie or they want to spin it off into three trades something later. It's your thing. And if you want to kill your main character, go for it. It's your book, and that's the greatness of it.
Totally.
And with comics, there was also going across the board. They're no longer just in books form. We've had cartoons and movies that came out this year. Like, to me, did you guys ever watch the Young Justice cartoon that was on Cartoon Network?
Never had the chance.
It's solid, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, the Young Justice cartoon is just so solid. It's such a the old Justice League cartoon and Justice League Unlimited when it became that. They're just so good. It's so not like childish. It's a very mature look at it. I mean, it's for the kids. They got the, you know, you can see them certain parts like, oh, that's a new action figure they're trying to sell. It's obvious when it's a cartoon sometimes that happens. but the stories are so strong. It's not, it's unexpected for me. It's almost like harkens back to Batman the Animated Series, how it was a solid, good comic book cartoon. And the Young Justice one, I mean, it's been off for a while. I think it's coming back in January. But from it started out with the kids, and they did a five-year jump, and it's just good stuff. All the different characters they introduced, I mean, it has their core, but then you get to see, like, random, like, D-list Teen Titans show up and have a story about them, and you get really enthralled on it. I'm like, that's just good writing. When you make me care about a character that I wouldn't know unless I looked them up on Google, that's, you know, it's good stuff. And we had, I mean, how many movies came out? We had, just think, just Dark Knight, Avengers, the Amazing Spider-Man. All these movies came out. That's just how much money did they make? It's like, it's a great time to be a comic book fan.
Totally.
I mean, did you guys see, I mean, I don't know, Dirk, you don't, I don't know, Dirk doesn't strike me as a movie-going guy. Did you see Dark Knight, Avengers, or Spider-Man?
Yes.
Oh, right on. What did you think of them, sir? I mean, Dark Knight and Avengers are just, it's a contrast. One was so, to me, seems to be so dark, deathly serious with Dark Knight, where Avengers seemed to be a little more fun. Did you prefer one over the other?
Avengers was an absolutely just fantastic movie. I mean, it's exactly what a movie should be when you go to a movie theater to see one. You know, you had to see that on the big screen. I went back and watched it a second time in 3D, which I don't go to, like you said, I don't go to movies in a theater. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't go see a movie twice in the theater. I saw it, and then I went back and saw it again in 3D just to see the third act in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And it was worth it.
Worth it, really? I've been so against 3D movies, so makes me think I missed out.
I am too. I'm not big on 3D, but that third act in 3D and that is just so, just wow. But you know, Amazing Spider-Man was good. Dark Knight was, of course, it was, you know, I mean, all three were just really great movies in different ways. I was least prepared to like Amazing Spider-Man as much as I did. I do think they edited the hell out of the movie to its detriment. There was a lot of stuff I remember even seeing in the trailers that weren't in the actual film.
Oh, that's a pet peeve of mine.
I would have much rather seen like a director's cut that was a little bit longer, not chopped up so much.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, everything was, it was good. It was a good year for superhero movies, man, no doubt. Superhero comics, for the most part.
It was, with the Avengers, it was great to be able to see someone move away from the whole trend of, oh, because The Dark Knight or Batman Begins did well, we have to make every single superhero someone who's couched in reality and darkness and isn't, you know, this whole burden of being a superhero rough. And Joss Whedon went, no, it's a stupid amount of fun. You get to fight aliens with your friends. And and he brought that same, you know, kind of group Firefly mentality to it, which, you know, makes for great group banter. And I think everyone, you know, there's no one who didn't have a great time watching The Avengers. And obviously, you know, any film has its, you know, its setbacks or whatever. But, you know, when in that climactic scene, when he keeps jumping from hero to hero in that giant fight in New York,
mm-hmm.
you were looking at it being like, this is a comic book that is being put onto film. And I know how esoteric that sounds, but you could just see just like the kinetic energy of action and the fun. And then the number one sucker punch in all of film this year. And you just watched him dot that I. It was flawless. It was just so much fun.
Mm-hmm. I remember sitting for a midnight showing. I was there, I think, like 3 or 4 hours early, sitting in my lawn chair, waiting. Mm-hmm. And just sitting there thinking, I can't believe I'm actually watching an Avengers movie. Even when Iron Man and Thor and these movies are coming, I'm like, there's no way we're going to get an Avengers movie. I know they were teasing, but there's no way they're going to put all these characters on the screen at the same time. That doesn't happen. It's not real. And then it actually happened. And you're like, crap. And then the first thing I thought of right when the credits rolled, where the hell is my Justice League movie? That was the first. I'm like, how is that not happening? So,
well, you know, the rumors are true. The Man of Steel movie will eventually parlay into that. So we'll see what happens.
There has to be an end of credit scene where he's talking to a shadowed Batman or something. Because if not, I'm going to be disappointed there's no other character in that movie.
Really? Are you going to be disappointed that they don't do a direct homage to how Marvel did it?
It works. I don't mean, it could be copying it. They have to do something. There has to be a mention of a larger universe. Maybe not after the credits. There has to be something that shows me that Gotham is out there, that Central City or Themyscira is out there, even if it's a mention on a news article, something to show a larger universe. I don't mind them copying Marvel and having the end of movie scene where Superman's floating over a building and you have a shadowed Batman and, you know, we need to talk, go to fade to black, and boom.
Right.
I would lose my mind. That's all I need.
And you are right in the sense that I think the way that Marvel was able to seed Phase One to get to the Avengers, to really kind of put into there that all of these worlds are connected. I don't know if you heard this, but apparently and this got cut from because they didn't have the budget or the time. They were going to have I forget if it was Avengers Tower was supposed to be in the New York skyline of Amazing Spider-Man.
Oscorp was supposed to be in the Avengers.
Oscorp was going to be in the Avengers.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they just didn't have time.
But at one point, and this is then to kind of go against my own point, during Dark Knight Rises, when you see the fighter jets buzzing Gotham after Bane drops the mic, I was looking at this, and I literally thought in my head, wow, this is a job for Superman.
Exactly. Where's the Flash?
Where the hell is he? Just drop in here, grab that bomb, and get out of here. We're done.
Exactly. Hey, there's rumors that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's going to be Batman in the Justice League movie. Those are flying around.
I'll believe it when I see it, and then I'll probably be disappointed by that. I don't know why, but I guess I'll be sad.
Yeah, to have Bruce not be in the Justice League would be kind of weird. Unless they kill off Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce has to come back.
that would be interesting.
Yeah, but just do a quick jump to the future. Look at 2015. Avengers 2 and Justice League are supposed to come out that year, and I think the next Spider-Man movie is that year as well.
Wow.
Yeah, that, and they're all supposed, I mean, they're all quote-unquote summer blockbusters, so that's going to be a crazy summer. I can't wait for that. I mean, but that's the future. Say less.
Yeah, assuming we survive.
Assuming we survive tomorrow, then we might get those movies. So. Woody, is there anything else that sticks out in your head as highlights of this year in geek culture?
I got really excited as a lifelong Halo fan that Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn came out on Machinima Prime, which I have to admit is just a cheap plug since I work for Machinima Prime. But it was super cool to see the imagination in that moment of something that you wouldn't have normally seen in that Halo universe, to actually see what could have been in terms of a Halo television series or a movie. I thought that was, I had goosebumps the entire time watching, you know, ODSTs dropping in from orbit was just, you know, I wouldn't say childhood because I wasn't that young when I was first playing Halo, but it was definitely one of those, like, I've always thought about this moment. It's just as cool as I thought it would be. So I squeed a little bit.
Yeah, I've been so out of video games. I think the last video game system I owned was a PlayStation 2, I think.
Wow.
And I've just been, I play computer, I think the last game I played was Skyrim on the computer, but I just kind of fell out. I mean, I'm not good at those shooting games. I lack the manual dexterity, I guess. I always end up getting, like, you know, when you do those deathmatch things, I'm the guy who always is getting shot in the head and some guy's humping my head with his nuts. That's what happens to me. And it just frustrates me. And I end up not playing. I'm that guy. And I'm like, oh, and, you know, I don't feel like screaming over the internet as a 14-year-old kid in Belgium. I don't need to be doing that.
See, I just yell over and over, well, I'll just drive home. And then I realize they are home. So that's that.
Let's see. What else happened? We had the big cosplay nerd girl kerfuffle that Mr. Manning was a big part of. So that was that must have been fun for you, Dirk. I remember your Facebook thing and the internet kind of exploded in your direction for like half a day. You know, hey, you can't say it wasn't a big thing. It was covered by a couple different comic news sites, and it was crazy. I remember sitting there looking at your Facebook thing and going, holy cow, this thing is blowing up. I just hit refresh, and the comments jumped from like 5 to 50, 100. I'm like, oh. Then it gets over to Bleeding Cool. I'm like, oh, Dirk, what did you do?
Shared a meme, and the wrong person got access to it.
Exactly. But, I mean, just not with the Dirk's, you know, his innocent thing that got blown way out of freaking proportion. The whole Tony Moore thing coming down on cosplayers. There's this whole
Tony Harris.
I always get those guys confused. Tony Harris coming down on them that they don't really belong at comic conventions because they're not real quote unquote comic fans because they're just bimbos in costumes trying to get attention.
The meme that I shared ended up facilitating a lot of this conversation, which was totally not my intent. I understand how it was construed that way, and my initial point of contention was don't hang an agenda that's not mine on my name. anybody that knows me knows that some of the allegations made about how I must feel for sharing that were pretty outlandish. But it became a real big deal. I mean, I'm glad the discussions took place. I'm glad the discussions took place. I still don't quite, I can't say I don't understand, but I definitely understand where some people that were very impassioned about this topic came from, and I share a lot of the passion that a lot of people actually were talking about. But it was interesting. It was very interesting. I'm glad the discussions took place, even if they were hung on me in a way that was not definitely at all representation of who I am or what I stand for. But again, you know, the thing about the internet, you know, people can, or you know, any argument really, people can say, well, I think you're this way, and say, well, I'm not. Well, I think you are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's great.
And you're not going to budge that rock.
Exactly.
No. And there was a very small and very vocal minority that got really loud and made a lot of noise. But it's a conversation worth having, you know. And then Tony Harris came along and said his piece on it, and it went from there. And it even went on after him for a while, and it's kind of faded out. And, you know, whatever. I don't even know where the whole... It was definitely an interesting way for the closing months of 2012 to be spent.
Definitely. Speaking of internet protocol here, what's been crazy to me is how people seem to be so okay throwing so much hatred at people, either through Facebook or through Twitter and things. I mean, just like we were talking about Spider-Man earlier, issue 700 was leaked, and let's say I read it, some other people read it. And Dan Slott is getting death threats over Facebook and Twitter over what he decided to do with Marvel's characters, which these people don't – as regular people, we don't own these characters. It's not like he took my character that I created and did something to it.
Right.
And it boggles my mind that people think it's okay just to be so negative and angry at people over fictional freaking characters. I don't get it. Just that's to me is like the downfall of the social – like we're so now interconnected – that I'm starting to see how ugly some people are. I'm like, I kind of used to like you as a creator. Then you say something, or these people I kind of pseudo know through the internet, and they put some stupid shit up. I'm like, oh, okay, unfollow, unfriend. I don't want to be associated with any of that. And it's just, it's fun to be able, like say, to meet Woody and to meet Dirk. I wouldn't know you guys without Twitter and Facebook and all these different things. And it's cool, but then there's the ugly other side of that coin where you meet somebody and you go, oh, I thought you were cool, and then not so much. And I don't know. It's a good thing, bad thing. I don't know what to do with Twitter and stuff anymore.
95% of people, if you talk to them long enough, you're going to find things that you fundamentally disagree on.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, I think because of the prevalence of things like Facebook and Twitter, suddenly everyone feels like they're the star of their own little soap opera or the star of their own reality TV show. And, oh, I got 1,000 people following me on Twitter, or, oh, I got 5,000 Facebook friends or whatever. Ooh, I'm a pseudo-celebrity. And I think a lot of people are feeling overly entitled, and we're seeing that more and more. I mean, I think we're seeing that in politics. We're seeing that online. We're seeing everywhere that people are just feeling more and more entitled, like you owe me or what I have to say matters, you know. And it's very, I think, frustrating for a lot of people to suddenly realize or to hear or to experience or what have you, or just come to this realization or the sensation that, hey, my rage does not affect the people I want it to affect. You know, I dealt with that myself a lot in this kind of the whole Manningate thing that started, you know. It was like, your outrage towards me does not affect me because it really doesn't apply to any sense of reality. You know, and for some people, it's just, I think, getting harder and harder for them to understand on a grand scale that their rage or their discontent is not equal to the amount of injustice or crisis that is really going on all these issues. You know, whether it be politics, whether it be comic book characters, whether it be word choice or anything, you know, there's just a huge sense of entitlement that social media is creating in people that we have to kind of level off. We have to gain perspective. We're the first real generation, I think, to experience this ability to make celebrities of ourselves so easily. But now that everyone is a celebrity, everybody's a star-bellied sneech, suddenly, you know, it's like, oh, well, wait, what do you mean my opinion doesn't matter and they can fire Gail Simone off of Batgirl and no one asked me and this is an injustice and this is a travesty and 30 of my friends agree they liked my status and I've got a blog. Whatever, man. Does it hurt to pat yourself on the back? So I think that's the big thing we're seeing now, and hopefully over time, everyone will get accustomed to this corrupting power of, and realize that, hey, just because you have a Facebook and you have a lot of friends doesn't make you a celebrity. You know, and it doesn't make your opinions any more important than the guy that has two friends. Mm-hmm. Some of those powerful people in comics don't have public Facebooks or Twitters or what have you.
What's wrong with that?
Not too much, apparently.
It's interesting for folks to the problem is that we have access to, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of people who, you know, would follow, you know, a certain person's Twitter feed or whatnot, and it is just so easy to just jot down whatever thought you have, and instantly whatever I would put on Facebook or put on Twitter, I can immediately quantify the value of that thought by saying, oh, okay, it's got 6 likes and 2 shares, so therefore it's more valuable than this thought that I had before, which means absolutely nothing. It could not be more mindless drivel, and yet, you know, if it has 2 retweets, you think to yourself, like, oh, hey, this thing's all right. But you can have creators or, you know, anytime, you know, Michael Bay gets drunk and decides to, you know, update his blog or something and say, you know, I'll never do HD DVDs, which was almost 10 years ago. It's just so easy to say, like, one thing, and because there is no room for context when you read the words, you don't know how a person feels, or maybe they say one thing that, you know, they would not have said out loud, but because it's so easy to tweet or Facebook something and they feel like, you know, that has some kind of worth, they get into a you know, world of hell about it.
Right. Look at the James Gunn thing that happened.
Yeah.
When people went back to a blatantly.
Oh, yeah.
Blatantly satirical, tongue-in-cheek. Mm-hmm. Blog post either from, like, 2010, and people were digging up and demanding that he apologize. And, you know, bottom line, he just said, fuck it, I'll apologize, I don't care. Whatever, sorry. And he cashed his Disney check, for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, everybody. Sorry I made you mad.
Sorry you didn't notice 2.5 years ago when it originally went up. I mean, you can't be out.
Right.
I understand being outraged that he put it – that'd be fine if it happened last week. When I was reading, I was like, oh, I can't believe he was stupid enough to say that. Anyway, oh, it was from 2 years ago?
Right.
Really?
You mean to tell me the creator of PG porn really has to be, like, upset about the stuff that he wrote, you know, X number of years ago? Like, that's ridiculous.
Isn't there a statute of limitations on what you put on the internet? Like, you're allowed to change your views, especially something like that. After so long, you can't bitch about something I did in 2009.
Right. God help me if, like, somehow – people like me a few years from now and start paying attention to the stuff that I wrote when I was, you know, in college. I am effed.
No presidency for you.
I will never work in this town again. It's regardless of where this town could be.
Exactly.
Well, that's going to be one of the things that comes up when people are going to be having to deal with is all of a sudden what happens now that your whole life is on Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that hard to go back unless you look at down someone's Twitter feed or look at their Facebook thing and go back in time and see, oh, hey, here in 2010, you said this, this, and this. And you're like, I don't even remember drunk tweeting that. And then all of a sudden, you're labeled as misogynistic, or you're a racist because of some weird little joke you thought was a DM to your friend, went out on a live Twitter feed, and someone, even though you deleted it, someone took a picture of it and stored it on their computer, and now it bit you in the ass 2 years later. It's just, it's a dangerous place, like you're walking on landmines.
Yeah. I mean, God forbid when the pictures of this orgy that I'm involved in come out, I mean, right. It's going to be, they're going to wonder why there were so many dudes and so few sheep.
Well, as long as you do it black and white and subtitled in French, it's a foreign film. You'll be okay. It's art then.
Well, and again, and I think the hardest thing for a lot of people going to be here is to hear is going to be, I don't care if you're offended.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was having a conversation with someone on Facebook a little while back, and I used this analogy. I said, so if I go to the grocery store and I'm wearing a shirt that offends a complete stranger, and a complete stranger comes up to me and says, your shirt really offends me, should I say, oh, I'm sorry? And then this person said, yeah. I'm like, well, that is where you and I fundamentally disagree.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to live my life, nor should any of us worried about what anybody else says and things like that. James Gunn, he's doing this Guardian of the Galaxy thing. Some people got upset. It's when emotions were very heated in a lot of those issues. And, you know, someone from Disney said, listen, dude, it was 2.5 years ago. Just fucking apologize. Anyway, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. That's it. Boom, went away. Because people feel validated.
Right.
And placated. And in that case, again, he's cashing Disney checks. Disney doesn't need the hassle. Marvel doesn't need the hassle. He doesn't need the hassle. Who cares? It was 2.5 years ago. Whatever.
Yeah.
You know? But again, it's just going to be this thing where people have to read, you know, people are going to have to learn to, you know, unfriend, ignore,
unfollow,
tolerate,
yeah,
and just recognize that the world doesn't revolve around them.
Exactly. Yeah. We live in the era of the vocal minority. And that's just, you know.
Yeah, and people are not villains for disagreeing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Different does not equal evil.
Totally true.
So, all right, gentlemen, I've kept you here for quite a while. Before I let you go, is there anything you guys would like to plug, any of your web presence, any websites or projects you're working on you'd like people to know about before I let you go? Dirk, I know you have your dirkmanning.com. You are got Shadowline, you're doing your comic, which I just read the last installment of I don't even know the name of it now, with the angel and the girl.
Oh, Inability to Cope from Love Stories About Death.
Oh, yeah. That's, you have issues in your head or something, friend. I mean, I love you,
well,
but.
Wait till you see the last two pages next week.
Oh, jeez. I'm just, the stuff you come up with, I don't want to be, like, I would like to see inside, but then I think I'd be, like, tarnished forever by seeing what goes on inside your head. It's crazy stuff.
Well, good. Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, people have generally had that reaction, which I'm very happy about. I'm over the holidays here, I'll be finishing the final touches on dirkmanning.com, finally entering the, I'll probably announce it, very beginning 2013, start promoting that, a link for all things Dirk Manning. But, as you mentioned, people can read my latest online comic series, Love Stories About Death, over at shadowlineonline.com. Next week we're finishing up, maybe by the time this goes live, our third installment of that called An Inability to Cope, about a girl and her relationship with her guardian angel that starts to go a little sour.
A little sour?
I don't want to give it away.
I'm just understatement.
I guess the first page kind of gives it away when you see that she's in the bathtub with her.
That's filled with her own blood? Yeah.
Filled with her own blood. That's probably a pretty. But anyway, it's good uplifting reading.
It's for the kids.
It's for the kids. It's for the children. The Right or Wrong book came out from Transfusion Publishing this year. I'm just super stoked about that. People can go to Amazon.com and get Right or Wrong, A Writer's Guide to Creating Comics, which is exactly what it sounds like. A 216-page book for people, writers especially, interested in not just learning how to write comics, but actually how to network with artists, find artists, and create comics. And then 2013, we'll see Tales of Mystery Volume 2. Online, as well as my story in Dies de la Mortis with Riley Rossmo.
That's awesome.
The Team Up of the Century. Yeah, I have actually seen the proof to issue one, and my story completed. Oh my gosh.
I tell you, Rossmo is an unbelievable artist, and the fact that you're writing, and Rossmo's art, you just take my money now. Just let me know where I can send a blank check. Yeah, where can I send a blank check? all I want to know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. We have a Dia de los Muertos number one comes out in January.
Awesome.
He asked me to write a story for the it's about the Mexican Day of the Dead, and I gave it to him, and he really dug it. And oh man, wow!
It's Rossmo. So, I mean,
that's it. So that's, I guess that's the biggest stuff I can announce right now.
Is there
more
has there
right,
been any
right
has there been any movement or any word on volume 4 of Nightmare World, or are we just stuck with 3? Can you say anything? Yes
there,
or no?
There are Nightmare World developments potentially brewing in other medium as well as comics.
Awesome. Very,
and,
very exciting.
But again, you know, I want to put up some of the things before we do the final volume in print. But there's also some interesting movement with Nightmare World right now. So
awesome.
2013 is going to be pretty interesting. I have a contract in my office right now. I have to take to my attorney. So we'll see what happens.
That's always exciting. Woody, do you have anything you want to share with the fans?
We have season 2 of the most underrated cop comedy in all of YouTube is now on Machinima Prime, Good Cops. I cannot recommend the series more. Of course, if you want to find all sorts of sci-fi and video game tentpoles, the YouTube original channel Machinima Prime should be your destination. We have 2 of 5 episodes of Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn, which is 40% of a good time. The Battlestar series, Battlestar Galactica Blood and Chrome, is available for a few more months. If you want to see lens flares and green screen and some really awesome dogfighting, I very much recommend it. We will, of course, have Mortal Kombat Legacy Season 2 coming next year, which will be super exciting, as well as another well-known franchise that I cannot legally talk about, but it will make people's heads explode.
Awesome.
What else? There is a thing coming down the pipe that maybe next time I'm on the podcast, if I'm ever invited on the podcast again, I will give news about. But it involves myself, my buddy Craig, and the post-apocalypse. So
awesome.
And yes, we will see. We will see in what direction that goes in, but it could be potentially very interesting. So
very cool.
You're rocking up right now, man.
I tell you, Woody's a mover and a shaker.
Just doing my job, citizen.
I personally have nothing to put out right now, but a friend of the show, Joel Gomez, is an artist friend of mine. He's been on it quite a bit. He has a Kickstarter that just started called Liberator. It's about a hero who's fighting for animal rights and things like that. It looks good. I mean, his art is always good. It's written by an animal activist. It just launched the other day. They got, let's see there, let me go to the page real quick. They're at 3,500 right now. They're about a sixth of the way to their goal. So it's moving well. If you guys want to bounce over, I'll put a link to that on the Kickstarter thing in the show notes. Check it out. It's Joel. You guys have listened to him on the show before. He's good people. Give him a few shekels. He'll appreciate it. other than that, guys, if the world does happen to end tonight, it was a pleasure talking to you. It was fun. If it doesn't, you guys both have an open invitation to anytime you want to just come talk shop. You have anything you want to plug or talk about, you're more than welcome to come back. I appreciate both your time. I'm sorry that we lost Joe to the Mayan apocalypse about a little while ago. We're going to miss
you
him.
You got to lose one.
Exactly. This show is in memory of Joel Mulvey. God rest his soul.
We miss you, Joe.
We miss you, Joe. Pour one out for our homie. And there's something else, guys. I'd like to say goodnight, and I'll talk to you guys again real soon.
Thanks for having me. Thank you very much, buddy.
Questions, comments, or concerns, email at randomidiocy@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Dwayne Feenstra. Random Idiocy is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. Head over to comicspodcast.com to find other great shows.